remained on display in the windows of Humphrey's print shop for many months may also have been a consideration. But since the Marquis refused to undertake another trip to the city wherein his daughter was accosted,
"You'll thank me for that later,"
he added rather obscurely, Lady Roberta St. Giles found herself heading quickly toward that undesirable stage of life known as old maid. 2 years passed. Every few months, Roberta's future would pass before her eyes, a life spent copying and cataloguing her father's poems, when not alphabetizing rejection letters from publishers for use by the Marquis's future biographers, and she would rebel. In vain did she reason, implore, or cry. Even threatening to burn every poem in the house had no effect. It wasn't until she snatched a copy of For the Custards Mary Brought Me and threw it in the fire that her father understood her seriousness. And only by withholding the single remaining copy of the custard poem did she gain permission to attend the New Year's ball being held by Lady Cholmondeley.
"We'll have to stay overnight,"
her father said, his lower lip jutting out with disapproval.
"We'll go by ourselves," Roberta said, "without Mrs. Grope."
"Without Mrs. Grope?"
He opened his mouth to bellow, but,
"Papa, you do want me to have some attention, don't you? Mrs. Grope will cast me entirely in the shade." "I shall need a new dress."
"An excellent thought. I was in the village the other day, and one of Mrs. Parthenol's children was running about the square looking blue with cold. I've no doubt but that she could use your custom."
She barely opened her mouth before he lifted his hand.
"You wouldn't want a gown from some other mantua maker, dearest. You're not thinking of poor Mrs. Parthenol and her 8 children?"
"I am thinking," Roberta said, "of Mrs. Parthenol's bungled bodices."
But her father frowned at that, since he had strong views about the shallow nature of fashion, and even stronger views about supporting the villagers, no matter how inferior their products. Unfortunately, the New Year's ball produced no suitors. Papa could not forbear from bringing Mrs. Grope.
"'Twill hurt her feelings too much, my dear."
And consequently, Roberta spent the evening watching revellers titter at the presence of a notorious strumpet amongst them. No one appeared to be interested in whether the Mad Marquis's daughter had a humped back or not. They were too busy peering at the Mad Marquis's courtesan. Their hostess was incensed at her father's rudeness in bringing his chère amie to her ball, and wasted none of her precious time introducing Roberta to young men. Her father danced with Mrs. Grope. Roberta sat at the side of the room and watched. Mrs. Grope's hair was adorned with ribbons, feathers, flowers, jewels, and a bird made from papier-mâché. This made it easy for Roberta to pretend that she didn't know her own parent. When the said plumage headed in her direction, Roberta would slip away for a brisk stroll. She visited the ladies' retiring room so many times that the company likely thought she had a female complaint to match her invisible hump. Around 11 o'clock, a gentleman finally asked her to dance, but he turned out to be Lady Cholmondeley's curate, and he immediately launched into a confused lecture to do with notorious strumpets. He seemed to be equating Mrs. Grope to Mary Magdalene, but the dance kept separating them before Roberta could grasp the connection. Unfortunately, they came face to face with the Marquis and Mrs. Grope just when the curate was detailing his feelings about trollops.
"I take your meaning, sirrah, and Mrs. Grope is no trollop," the Marquis snapped.
Roberta's heart sank, and she tried vainly to turn her partner in the opposite direction. But the plump little pigeon of a man dug in his heels, squared his shoulders, and retorted,
"Muse upon my comments at your leisure, or woe betide your eternal soul."
Everyone in the immediate vicinity stopped dancing, grasping that a more interesting performance had begun. The Marquis did not disappoint them.
"Mrs. Grope is a lovely woman, kind enough to accept my adoration,"
Roberta's father roared, loud enough so that no one in the room could miss a word.
"She is no more a trollop than is my own daughter, the treasure of my house."
Predictably, the crowd turned as one to examine the signs of trollopdom, the first interest shown Roberta all evening. With a gasp, she fled back to the ladies' retiring room. Within a half hour, Roberta made several important decisions. The first was that she'd had enough humiliation. She wanted a husband who would never, under any circumstances, make a public display of himself.